Earth and Sky.
We know that people can get by with some sleep loss and some stress for an acute or short period of time of a few days or a week or two. What we're curious about now is trying to understand, because lunar and Mars missions and the future space flight will involve longer periods in time, we're trying to understand cumulative negative effects or adaptations to space flight conditions.
You're listening to space medical researcher David Dinges, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Dinges spoke with Earth Sky's Jeremy Scheer about a test to help astronauts gauge fatigue and stress during long missions in space.
We all experience stress and sometimes fatigue. How and why are stress and fatigue increased for astronauts on long missions to Mars or the Moon?
Well, astronauts are trained thoroughly, selected for the job and trained thoroughly, but no matter how capable a human is, and astronauts are at the top of that, once they're in space flight, they are subject to conditions that result in sleep loss and high performance demands and potentially life-threatening situations such as doing an EVA or spacewalk. So there are conditions that are required as part of the work they do in space and the environment they live in that puts them – that makes both fatigue and stress something that is fairly common.
So you're working on a self-test for stress and fatigue as it relates to performance during long space missions. Why a self-test? Why can't astronauts simply test each other?
To begin with, the reason that we want to test them at all with something very brief and valid and reliable is because we know from extensive research on Earth that even the most capable people, when they're under chronic conditions of fatigue or challenges to their sleep system or their stress systems, lose the ability to introspect or know just how well they're doing. So we need an objective test. The trick is, what kind of objective test? How fast could you do it? And how reliable and valid is it? The reason that we don't have them test each other is because people are extremely sensitive to others knowing what their actual capability is.
I see. So the test you're developing is called the Psychomotor Vigilance Test, or PVT. How does it work, and what does it test for?
Well, so this test came out of years of work, and like many things in science, it seems stunningly simple, but so that is sort of the point. What we found many years ago is that as we were studying sleep-deprived people for various federal agencies, is that the nature of fatigue impairments and stress impairments is not so much that you can't do something, but rather that you become much more variable. You have difficulty sustaining your attention, responding quickly, processing quickly, and one moment you may be fine, but another moment, after that, you may not be fine, and it may fluctuate very rapidly, as opposed to the fully alert, unstressed person who's just steady as you go, performing all the time. So we developed a test that had no learning curve, that is, that did not get better over time, even if you were impaired, and that had no aptitude difference, the kind of difference that is sensitive to how much education people have had or whether one is smarter than another. And that test is the simple sustained attention task or vigilant attention task, where randomly, every few seconds, you have to push a button to a light. What we're measuring is the speed of that reaction and how stable or variable your reactions are. In particular, we're interested in when are you slow to respond by even half a second or a few thousandths of a second, and when are you too fast to respond, in which case you're responding or hitting the button before the stimulus comes on. And we look at, these are both errors of omission and commission, and we're looking at both of those. And out of that, we've developed a metric of state instability that we know is the hallmark of fatigue and stress.
Okay, so again, let's say that I'm up there on the space shuttle or on the space station, and it's time for me to take the test. What would I actually do? How would it practically work?
Well, it's remarkably simple. You would pull up on the computer the test, enter your secure ID number, and up would come a series of questions, very short ones, asking you basically what are the conditions of today. Did you sleep last night? Have you had any space motion sickness? How tired are you now? To get some subjective information. Then you're ready to take the test, and at that point, you sit with your finger on the button and you watch the screen, and as soon as a light turns on the screen, you hit the button. Now, that light is actually a millisecond counter, so once you hit the button, it stops the counter. It looks just like a light on continuously, but when you hit the button and stop it, it shows you how fast you were in thousandths of a second. So a typical human reaction time would be 200 to 250 milliseconds or thousandths of a second, or 1/5 of a second to 1/4 of a second. So then it goes out, and randomly in the next few seconds, it'll come on again, and you hit it again. So as you can see, it's stunningly simple. But what you learn with this test is you cannot necessarily control your brain when you're tired or overly stressed or distracted or suffering some sort of what we call a neurobehavioral deficit, and that will show up in the final score. You just do that test for 3 minutes, then you get a final score that says, here's your percentage score on where you are compared to alert, capable astronauts.
I see. And so based on that feedback, will the computer then make recommendations and say, don't go out and do the spacewalk, you need rest, or you're okay? Or is it up to the astronaut to then decide based on the results of the test?
It's up to the astronaut, although the program, right after the test, asks the astronaut a series of questions about, do you want to take the test again? And if the test was difficult to do, why was it difficult to do? And then it'll ask about being fatigued, feeling groggy, feeling overly stressed, distractions in the environment. We allow them to indicate what kinds of factors might have been present at any given time, but we do not suggest a specific countermeasure because the test doesn't tell us with precision what may have caused the deficit. We believe the astronaut is probably better capable, since they watch their performance very closely, of knowing whether it's associated with one kind of condition versus another, whether it's associated with chronic sleep loss or whether it's associated with worry or concern about a given condition on the spacecraft.
So how might this research benefit people on Earth?
Well, it's directly relevant to a large number of situations on Earth where we're trying to understand whether people are capable of performing in potentially lethal, dangerous, or continuous operations. So first responders, whether you're trying to understand whether people are safe operating transportation vehicles, long-haul aircraft, trucks, etc., ships, whether they're capable of dealing with constant vigilance tasks, screening at airports, whatever, what is happening and how to improve on it before a serious error or accident occurs.
That was space medical researcher Dr. David Dinges. Dr. Dinges is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. Our thanks today to the National Space Biomedical Research Institute, innovations for health in space and on Earth. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
We're at earthsky.org.